The role of the Indian Navy has come into sharp focus, perhaps more than ever before, given the evolving nature of the threats that one faces in the North Arabian Sea. The situation off the coast of Yemen, the rise in piracy, also matters of grave concern, is also the growing presence of the Chinese Navy in the waters of the Indian Ocean. Joining us now to discuss the nature of these threats, how India is responding to that, the Chief of Naval Staff. Thanks very much, Admiral, for being with us. You face a fairly dynamic situation off the coast of Yemen. We'll discuss the role of the Indian Navy and piracy in a moment. But your ships are also in harm's way. They could face threats from ballistic missiles, from anti-ship cruise missiles, from various sorts of drones, some on the surface of the sea as well. Could you give us the state of alert that the ships of the Navy are now operating in off the coast of Yemen?
See, whenever we deploy a ship, the ship is combat ready and it is in a combat ready role. So we have ships deployed as on mission deployments, and they are actually forward deployed to various locations in the Indian Ocean where we feel we need a presence. So these mission based deployed ships, they are fully combat ready, and the advantage of a naval warship is that ship can switch roles from the high end of the spectrum, that is from combat role to diplomatic or constabulary or even benign role, like, you know, to participate in HADR, etc. So that is one of the major advantages of a warship when she is deployed. So currently they are all deployed for anti-drone operations and to escort our Indian flagged merchant vessels. At the same time, they will render assistance to any flagged vessel which is either attacked or which is in distress, or any assistance is required. So a simple example was, you know, we had provided assistance to a tanker which was hit, which was a Marshall Island flagged vessel, and it was carrying some 86,000 tons of naphtha. So roughly about 500 crores worth of cargo, and it was on fire, and the crew asked for assistance. There were other ships in the vicinity, the US warship and I think a French warship were there. They did provide them assistance in terms of material, but nobody went on board to help them. So they had requested us if we can send a team. So we sent a team with the firefighting equipment, and we brought worked along with them to bring the fire under control, and then the ship proceeded on. So we go out to help any mariner in distress, the orders are very clear, and they have to counter the drones in case, you know, any attack is evident. So that's how we have the ships deployed. We had nearly 10 ships deployed there, over 10 ships deployed.
And sir, when it comes to intercepting drones or missiles, it is in defense not just of our own ships, but I presume also in defense of the merchantmen who are sailing through those waters.
Yeah. So right now we have where we are operating, we are largely focusing on the Indian flagged merchant vessels or those which are carrying cargo, and, you know, some specific cargo like fertilizers or grains or something like that, which specifically for our ports where they ask for assistance, then we are escorting them. So the orders are very clear. In case they are being targeted, they will, you know, act in self-defense and, you know, protect both the cargo as well as our ships. But so far we have not had the requirement. What we have seen is largely the Houthis are the ones who are, you know, carrying out this missile attack. So they are carrying out attacks on either Israeli-owned or Israeli-linked or sometimes US-flagged or US-linked, some Western-linked ships only is what we have seen. Fortunately, there has not been any, while the other part of it is that many of these ships have Indian crew.
Yes.
You know, in some numbers, it may not be completely Indian, but there will be Indian, you know, and a mixed crew. So, because we have more of, you know, Indian personnel, so serving as seamen and on various, as sailors on various ships, the possibility of Indian crew being there is very, very high in almost every ship. So that is another concern for us. But fortunately, despite so many attacks, there have hardly been any injury or any serious casualty to anybody. So we are just keeping
But so these ships as well, you would defend if you detect them coming under attack, because there are dozens of ships on a daily basis.
Yeah.
So it's not just ships bound for India. What about other ships which, you detect missiles coming in
so
their
vicinity? If something comes in our vicinity, then and we feel that, it's likely to cause harm, then obviously we'll act in self-defense.
And Admiral, have we been detecting some of these missile launches or drone launches or anything of the sort?
Our ships are deployed there, so we have been keeping track of all these drones and missiles, etc., which are being launched, because the ships have got very powerful sensors, very capable sensors. So they have to be prepared, because you are in a combat zone actually. So the ships which are deployed are very capable, potent ships, and they are ready to respond in case we are threatened.
Sir, the nature of warfare itself is changing. We keep talking about drones.
The
character of warfare is changing. Sir, just in the last 72 odd hours, there's been another ship which has been sunk off Crimea, again by uncrewed drones. What sort of threat does this represent?
So this is, it's an evolution of, a torpedo, in the sense, a torpedo is also an underwater weapon which, moves at a certain speed and, carries out an attack. But in this case, it is probably, underwater, UUV or a semi-submerged type of a craft which has got a very low, radar signature, which is probably carried out this attack. So in the Russia-Ukraine war, what you have seen is the proliferation of drones of different types. The drones which fly in the UAVs, then the USVs, unmanned surface vessels, then the UUVs. So all different types of unmanned systems are being developed, and these are cheap. And that brings us to, this question of, the asymmetry in the cost.
Yes.
The cost of the attacking weapon is in many times substantially lower than the defending weapon or the counterattacking weapon. So for example, if you take the case of a drone which is being used against a merchant ship, it may probably cost about, in my estimate, it may cost about 50-60 lakhs. But a missile will cost at least, 3-4 crores. So there is a wide asymmetry between, the attacking weapon and the defending one.
So even yesterday there was a government press release which said that we are buying remotely operated guns, 12.7 mm for the Coast Guard and the Navy, to engage these asymmetric threats. How important is that in given what we are seeing, new additions as defensive means?
These are all, weapons which are either nearly autonomous or automatic, which can detect and, engage a target. And they have a very high, rate of fire, and they can be used at very close quarters as well. So these weapons are now being made in India. So earlier there was transfer of technology, etc., has happened, and they are being manufactured in India. And installation is already in progress on many ships, we hope to have them on almost all our ships.
Yeah.
So they are modern weapons and
right.
Used against all these USVs and threats which come at very close ranges.
Yes.
Because they have a very high rate of fire, and they can be activated, and many of them can be controlled through various sensors.
Sure.
And so on.
Admiral, the other big part of what we've done is respond to piracy. It seems that piracy has gone up at a time when there is so much uncertainty and in that particular region. Could you tell us a little bit about, how we've been right on our commandos, our ships, our helicopters have been right on the edge over there, taking on men who are very heavily armed and then disarming them, besides anything else?
No, so piracy has been an age-old, activity, criminal activity, I would say. And I want to just place on record that one of the major enablers this time has been the passing of the Anti-Piracy Act 2022, you know, which was passed in December 2022 by our government. This has really strengthened our, you know, ability to, we call it VBSS, that is visit, board, search and seize. So I have now tasked the ships. There are about 4 ships deployed for this. They are operating very close to Somalia and the areas where we have seen this piracy resurgence. So they are now boarding, inspecting and looking for piracy triggers like high-speed OBMs, high-speed motors and weapons and so on. And taking very firm action against, you know, any suspicious activity. So what we are doing now, what we are doing in, when we receive any input about a piracy attack or a suspected attack is, so first we have eyes on the vessel. So either a PATI is diverted or a Sea Guardian is launched, or if it is in the area already, it is diverted to that place. We keep an eye on it and we put an asset to close this contact at the fastest speed. And in the meantime, we have the helicopter, the Marcos, the boats, everything ready, and we give them fair warning, and then we, you know, board. So generally, you have to get concurrence of the company which is operating it, which we do. All the information actually comes to this the facility we have set up called the IFC Iowa.
Yes.
At Gurugram. So that is now a full-fledged information center, which keeps track of all the and provides you a fair amount of MDA or domain awareness, maritime domain awareness in the Indian Ocean region. And so based, it helps us respond faster. And whenever we get inputs, we get clearance from the owners or the company operating it, and so that the crew, the safety is ensured. And then we have our internal processes. We deploy straight away and then we take action.
Admiral, there was this one ship which was struck deep in the Arabian Sea. We've done investigations on that, chemical analysis of the explosives used, and we have concluded that it was a drone which struck this particular ship. Do we know where that drone was fired from?
No, it could have been fired from anywhere, but it has been fired from very far, actually. It has got a fairly large endurance, so it could have been from anywhere, you know, by the Houthis or, you know, any other place. I suspect it's by the Houthis only. But it is not just one ship. I just want to tell you that there at least about 4 ships in our region have been struck, commencing from sometime in November last year till, you know, as late as a couple of weeks back. So this has been happening off and on, and our estimate, the ranges are quite high, and the drones are cheap. They're not that expensive. In fact, the engine that they use is the engine of a moped.
Yes.
So, and the airframe, everything, and if you look at the PCBs and etc., they're quite, you know, simple stuff. So, so this is what is the asymmetry I was talking of, and it could well be the Houthis or somebody who's supporting them.
Admiral, how do they target ships so far out?
So, our assessment is that, you know, probably they come in pairs, you know, one carrying a payload and the other carrying other with a sensor. Either an AIS sensor or a UIR sensor. We've not been able to get that part of it because when it hits, it gets damaged and, you know, all the parts we couldn't recover. So, definitely it's a kamikaze type of a drone, and probably it's escorted by one more which, you know, gives the information. So this is our understanding of it, and that is probably helping them to target.
So, if we look at our region, there is also the growing presence of China. Even now, there is a ship, a so-called research ship, which is now well off the coast of the Maldives because they haven't docked there as yet. But it appears to be doing seabed analysis, and they've been doing this now for a number of years. What do you believe their intention is in these waters?
See, China has got its own interest like any other nation. And if you see the oceans, unlike, you know, land, is are free, open, and open for all. It's a global common. That's what you call it. So therefore, the Chinese research ships legitimately engage in research activities in the open ocean, which so long as not the exclusive economic zone or territorial sea of any particular country. Mm-hmm. And we have seen them operate with the consent of the host government, especially in Bangladesh, you know, Maldives and various other countries as well. So they do, probably they are looking for, you know, normally when you do research work, survey work like this, then you are either profiling the waters or profiling the bottom and either looking for resources and probably, you know, charting the terrain underwater. So it may have military applications as well in terms of, you know, your ability to deploy submarines or operate submarines and things like that. So, well, largely it looks from a commercial point of view as, you know, searching for resources, I would say, whether it is petroleum or, you know, polymetallic nodules or, you know, any other type of resource or energy, any other type of energy resource or gas, etc. But the possibility of the data being used for other things exists, is right. All I would say.
Yeah. And sir, there is a new generation of Chinese weaponry in the vicinity. New submarines which Pakistan will be acquiring, supersonic cruise missiles which Pakistan will be acquiring, new generation of Type 54 frigates which they are now in the process of acquiring. What challenge does that represent to us? How are we well equipped to deal with that?
So that is quite evident in terms of the capability enhancement that is happening with the Pakistan Navy. There were generally about a 20-22 platform force, and I think their expansion plans are up to go up to nearly 50 mm-hmm. platforms. And they are well on their way towards us, 81 class submarines, all these are on order. So we see the capability accretion happening. So we keep track of all the developments, and you know, our platforms are also no less potent. And we while the Chinese platform that they are getting, like the Tugril class, are quite capable platforms. At the same time, we are also doing building capability. We do have a sizable number of ships under construction, etc. We are also replacing our fleet. So we see the developments in our neighborhood, and we see what is happening, what is the capability being built up, and accordingly we also fine-tune our operational processes, the capability perspective plan and so on.
Sure. So we've got a fantastic range of ships coming out. The Project 17 Alpha is one, which will be the bedrock in a sense in terms of numbers for the Indian Navy. How does this represent an incremental sort of addition to your force capabilities, whether in sensors or in weapons?
It is, the number-wise, we are, as of today, we have about 66 ships which are under, ships and submarines are under construction, of which 64 are being built in India itself.
Yes.
And while we started with the Nilgiri class frigate as, you know, many years back, almost 40 years back, today after having commissioned, Vikrant and, operating her, we are very, very confident that, we are now a builder's navy, not a buyer's navy. So the 17 Alpha class, Alpha Bravo, they represent the best, in terms of being the frigates, and 15 Alpha Bravo destroyers. They are, as good or as comparable to any of the other ships which are operating anywhere, I would say.
Yeah.
So that's why we are very confident of deploying them as well, for various taskings in the current environment. So we have seen the quality of the ships improve as we build, from one version to another. So there are lessons learned which get incorporated, and and by the time some new technology comes in, new equipment comes in, so we have the ability now to retrofit and do things better. So that is a, inherent capability as well as at the same time capacity building has also happened. And we are also being able to reduce the build timelines, and to bring it almost comparable to world standard. So this is by adopting something called, integrated construction. So it is, when you give a ship to a yard for construction, that ship, what it does is it, it gives, outsources the various compartments of the ship. It is built in various places, brought to one place and then put together. So which saves a lot of time and effort, and that's been a world trend as well. So we have adopted that, and that has helped us, in reducing the timeline. So for example, the ships, ASW Shallow Watercraft, etc., which is being built in GRSC, They have given part of it to L&T.
Yeah.
So it is being built there, then brought together, you know, and then assembled at same. So these are the later modern trends in shipbuilding.
So given the fact that even in the past, the Chinese have deployed nuclear-powered fast attack boats in the Indian Ocean, is it not your dream as the Navy chief to have Indian fast attack boats counter, you know, their growing presence?
We definitely want to grow into a very well-balanced force, you know, whether be it in terms of aircraft carrier, be it in terms of submarines, etc. So there is as far as submarines are concerned, there is a submarine building plan, 30-year submarine building plan, which was approved in 1999. So since then, of course, some delays, etc. have happened, but the Project 75 are part of this plan. We are supposed to have 24 submarines. And subsequently, out of those 24, we are supposed to have some 6 nuclear submarines, nuclear attack submarines as well. So the thing is, we would like to make it ourselves, and we have learned. We have been on the learning curve for some time, and we are now quite confident of making it. So this proposal has now been taken up, and it is currently, you know, under process. We are quite hopeful that, you know, it should come through, and these have long gestation periods.
Yes.
So we are quite confident now of, you know, having the capability and the technology and the understanding and the ability to, you know, not only build it, to operate it as well.
A time-honored question which every CNS has been asked ever since I've been coming here for 27 odd years, a third aircraft carrier. Is that something which you believe makes sense from a cost-benefit perspective?
See, the third aircraft carrier which was on the works earlier was called ISC-2.
Yes.
And that was a 65,000 ton aircraft carrier with catapult launch and, you know, arrested recovery and all that. That was a big, you know, even bigger than almost about 25,000 tons larger, more than the Vikrant.
Right.
So to build a aircraft carrier like that, you need much more infrastructure and, you know, various other additions in terms of your capacity. So at the same time, now what has happened is the technology has facilitated you in many ways. So now you have the possibility of UCAVs, you have, you know, UAVs and etc., which can serve you, you know, provide you the same effect as what you could probably get from a larger aircraft carrier. So at this stage, what you're looking at is a repeat order of Vikrant, and which will be almost the same size, but with, you know, more modern equipment or later equipment, so that we can at this, and which in our estimate now should be able to give us, you know, almost similar capability as a much larger one. If it has got manned unmanned teaming, you know, with good aircraft and, you know, unmanned systems and UCAVs and so on. At the same time, you know, this repeat order that you're looking at will essentially be a replacement for Vikramaditya.
Yes.
Because even if you place and get approvals in the next 1 year or 1.5 years, it will have build time of at least, you know, 8 to 10 years, yes, plus maybe a couple of years of operation, by which time Vikramaditya will be due for decommissioning.
Yeah.
Because when we got her itself, she was more than, you know, 25 years old.
Yes.
And so we have now operated for about 15 years as such. So that is what we are looking at as of now. So once we build, then, you know, at that point of time, if we feel there is a need for more carriers, then certainly we can't have a cap on, you know, what is your the number of carriers you need. Should it be 2? Should it be 3? Should it be 4? Should it be 6? Because when you look around, while there is a school of thought which says that, you know, aircraft carriers are history, but you just have to look around to see how many aircraft carriers are built in various countries. Like China has, you know, got plans to build 10.
Yes.
Many countries like Japan and all are thinking of converting their helicopter carriers into aircraft carriers. UK has got 2. France has got 1. And, you know, they're thinking of making more. So, aircraft carrier provides a certain capability which cannot be provided by a shore-based, you know, aircraft. Because, you know, if the fleet has to have air defense, you know, 24/7, then you have to have a carrier, because aircraft operating from shore cannot provide you 24/7,
sure,
you know, air defense cover. It can do many things from shore, but it cannot provide you, you know, this capability. So it's a capability that has to be, you know, is required for successful operations at sea.
The Rafale would be, in the Indian Navy's estimation, the aircraft of choice for the moment, until the TED BF comes on board, right?
Is that we have,
the time scale, sir, or there's a deal process happening?
No, we have sent the LOR, and we are just we have just received the LOA from them, and it is under process. We are hopeful that maybe by the middle of the year or towards the end of the year, we'll get the contract should get signed, and then 36 months from then is what the first aircraft delivery is planned. And this definitely is a stopgap, because we have taken a commitment that we'll become an Atmanirbhar force by 2047 or earlier.
Yeah.
So therefore we are aggressively taking forward the case for the TED BF, twin engine deck based fighter, and that actually will become the mainstay of both the carriers, you know, over time. So for TED BF, the timeline obviously is we are earlier looking at 2027, 2028. Maybe it'll slip by a couple of year or so, but definitely production should be around 2032, 2033, and then by the time we build up adequate assets, it'll be maybe 2044 to 2045. So that is the long term plan.
The next couple of days we'll see a huge collection of navies from around the world. And this is important because this fits into naval diplomacy, which India has always spoken about, espoused for decades.
Yeah, we are having a major exercise called the Milan. This is the 12th edition of the Milan. It started in 1995 or so. At that time, it was very small, with about participation of four countries, four of our friendly foreign countries from the Indian Ocean region. Since then, we have it every alternate year. The number and scope has been gradually going up, and this year we have extended invite to about 58 countries, and we have received acknowledgement and confirmation from about 50 plus countries. So this will be the largest number ever so far, and about 18 ships, foreign warships, are participating, and one aircraft is also confirmed as participating in the exercise. So this this time the theme is camaraderie, cohesion, collaboration, working together to find solutions to the maritime challenges. So this is starting on the 19th and will continue till 27th, which when it will finish at sea. So the about 4 days of harbor phase and 3 days at sea.
Yeah.
So the harbor phase includes subject matter expert exchange, seminar, various demonstrations and interactions, and so on. And at sea we have the exercises, anti-aircraft, anti-submarine, seamanship, navigation, firings, etc. So this is quite a well structured and exercise involving a large number of units, etc. We also have many ships participating from the our navy, and it is not, I would say, all work. There are sports fixtures as well. We expose them to our foreign friends to the Indian culture, the Indian cuisine. They have city tours, and there's a city parade at Vishakhapatnam.
Sure.
So this is quite a major exercise that we undertake, and the aim is to make friends, build trust, cooperate, and find solutions to challenges.
Wonderful speaking to you, Admiral. The Chief of Navy Staff, they're speaking about the threats which exist in the Indian Ocean region, how the Indian Navy is countering it, and also future plans which actually add. And given the long gestation period involved, it's important to remember that what the Navy plans today and signs contracts for will not enter service immediately. It will take time, but the threats are also evolving. We need the platforms to meet these threats.